Welcome to Build with Bitcoin. I'm co-host Israel Munoz, and along with Lynn Bairstow, today we're doing a 2024 year in review. We're excited as we're wrapping up the first year of the podcast. We have quite a bit to get through, and we'll try to be as structured as possible. It's a kind of a landmark moment for us, so we're excited to share some of our thoughts and what we've learned along the way while we've been in this journey, trying to get a little deeper into the innovation on the Bitcoin technology, speaking to founders from all over the world, speaking to investors. And yeah, let's get right into it, Lynn. You know, maybe we can start with a little bit of the why we launched Build with Bitcoin and the big picture. So, you know, that being said, we officially launched actually coincidentally right around Halving Day, right? In April of 2024, even though we've been getting ready for it for longer than that. But I mean, just as a starting point, Lynn, the question actually we typically give to our guests, right? You know, why are you deciding to put your time into Bitcoin?
Yeah, thank you, Israel. And first of all, I just have to say what a pleasure it's been to be on this journey with you, because I think that, you know, our skill sets are so complementary. And I think that we both have a common goal of this podcast of really trying to look at and dissect and shine a spotlight on Bitcoin as a technology and as a protocol and as probably one of the most important technology advances in our civilization that we've underscored. And most people talk about Bitcoin as an asset, digital asset, or as a currency, store of value. They go at it from a micro or macroeconomic perspective, which is important. But I think you and I both came to it with a slightly different approach, that we saw it as a technology. And so, you know, understanding that not enough people were sharing the stories of those founders that were building the foundational infrastructure for Bitcoin and the tools that allow it to be more readily adopted is important. And then beyond that, the investors that support them. So I got into Bitcoin in 2012. I was introduced to it the late 2012. I had a conference that I ran, the Meet to Tech Talks, and one of the guests, Shak Khan, was launching Coinbase. And so he was the one who, I'd never heard of Bitcoin before. I bought my first Bitcoin in 2000.
CoinDesk, by the way, right?
CoinDesk.
Yeah. Yes. Okay.
CoinDesk. And so, which was the first publication to really cover news about Bitcoin. Nothing had existed at that time beyond GitHub and some of the more technical outlets for learning about Bitcoin. So when I heard about it, it clicked for me immediately. And I bought my first Bitcoin in early 2013. I had to figure out how to buy it. But then as I progressed over the years, I mean, it wasn't my primary focus, but I think over time I began to see more facets of Bitcoin. It really all came together for me, together with my economics background in 2020, when we were going through the, you know, the advanced money printing, and just seeing how Bitcoin could not only be a technology, but also really help solve some of the financial problems that we were facing. And in terms of runaway money supply, and just tying it all to the different difficulties in our financial system and the broken money system that we had. So, but still, you know, as you and I had talked about, there were tools that needed to be built, that were being built. There were investors that were supporting them. And I'd had a venture capital fund for the last 10 years, which I just wound down last year. And it invested in early stage tech companies in primarily Mexico and LATAM. And so taking my background or my expertise as a venture capital investor and working with startups, especially as a mentor in the Google startup program, you know, I love working with startups and I love this whole space. And so it was, when you look at the big picture of Bitcoin, there are lots of ways you can contribute. And I just thought, well, one way I can contribute is kind of combining my background and skill sets of VC and working with startups and, you know, being enthusiastic about Bitcoin to learn more about what's going on in the startup ecosystem and who are the investors that are supporting these big bets. And so that's how I came to it and my motivation for being a part of this journey. Israel, what about you? You want to share your story about your motivation?
Yeah. I mean, I'll share mine very briefly. But I think part of why we aligned, Lynn, is And by the way, I'm very happy to have the chance to work on all of this with you. Anyone who isn't familiar with Lynn's work, I highly encourage you to. She's very knowledgeable and is a great person to work with. And so, but that being said, Lynn, I mean, what I was getting to is, I think as time passes, you eventually, and you learn more and more about this technology and what Bitcoin is, you get to a point where you do realize, like, geez, I need to work on this more, you know. It's something that, so getting back to, I guess, how I was introduced, 2013, I began working on this. End of 2013, 2014 was when me and my business partner from then decided to launch a company for remittances, right? So that was my first kind of dive into Bitcoin. I was lucky to have some natural curiosity into economics and math before that. You know, I had been already curious and prepped as to what this, you know, era of easy money and low interest rates, like kind of the alarms were already kind of up in my head, let's just say. And then, you know, I saw this technology function for the first time in 2014. And it was precisely testing a remittance to Brazil was the first kind of use case I actually, you know, tested out. And started looking into this with my business partner. And we just realized, you know, hey, it's still tiny. Back then, it was mostly millions, not billions like now. The volume that was moved around, it was still something that I saw was functional and could happen, right? So I came at it from the technology side as well, because a little similar to you as far as just realizing, wow, this technology this works, right? I mean, it's a global money that's borderless and is functional. And of course, you get a little more into it and you realize how much is behind this technology and the significance, and that evolves over the years, right? Going back to my point of realizing that you just kind of almost need to spend some more of your time on this is because I think, and I know you share this as well, there is a very strong component of feeling like you're improving things in society by helping this ecosystem grow, right? I mean, once you realize just how broken some of the incentives are in our current monetary system, just because structurally that's how it's built. I mean, if it's, you know, maybe served as well to some extent for many years, but it's you definitely, regardless of your opinion, I think it's very clear that it's time to upgrade if there's a technology that can realign and fix some of these things that kind of, you know, end up leading to a bit of hopelessness. It's, you know, it steals people's purchasing power and savings. And this just creates all sorts of shackles around society, which is part of the motivation. I mean, all that to say, working on this is, it's always nice to feel like you're improving society as well, right? With your passion and your work. So, yeah, that's
it's so important. And yes, Israel, I mean, absolutely. It's like, I feel like it's such a rewarding effort to be working in the Bitcoin space. And not only, I mean, my first career was on Wall Street, so that, you know, I really have come full circle on that. And so I guess I've always been fascinated with how money works and then venture capital and how it's used to, you know, to support innovation and positive change in the world. But, you know, until Bitcoin came around, I've never seen anything like this, because you're right, it does help improve financial inclusion, financial opportunities, just elevate overall so many other sectors in the world that have been kind of left out of the system. And whether that's being able to receive money from a relative that is sending it home in a quicker, easier, less expensive way, to, you know, facilitating payments over, you know, briefer periods of time, less costly. I mean, it just facilitates so much in the global financial network that it's endlessly fascinating. And then you get into all the subsets of Bitcoin, like mining and even, you know, using the Bitcoin blockchain to secure election integrity. So there's just, you know, it's been such a fascinating journey to get to explore these other aspects of the Bitcoin technology.
And, you know, maybe be just one last comment or thought before we jump into some of the learnings. You know, something that actually stuck with me, Lynn, from some of our initial conversations is you told me, listen, I saw the internet boom and wave coming when I was, you know, younger. And I remember having that feeling that this is going to change the world drastically. And I didn't jump in as much as I, in retrospect, should have. I should have believed more in what I was seeing and studying. I remember you saying that and basically saying, you know, and that's not going to happen to me again. That's why I need to just follow my gut and continue working and giving back in a way into this whole, you know, Bitcoin movement, if you want to call it that. Which, by the way, I'm not sure exactly what you meant on you having not done as much as you wish, because you also had a VC fund for 10 years that invested in technology startups. But I mean, I just mentioned that because it stuck with me in the fact that you've lived through the internet wave and boom, you kind of see it coming again, right?
Yeah. I mean, it's actually the third kind of movement that I've seen from a technology perspective. The first was the internet boom, which was just right there. But it reminds me, the parallels between the beginning of the internet and beginning of this Bitcoin adoption are really clear to me, and how everybody criticized it. It's just for kids. It's just for drug dealers. It's just it's not serious. And then, you know, where we are today with the internet, I mean, it's just pervaded all communications and all entertainment and just the way we move thoughts through space and time and open it up globally. And then social media, which is another one that, you know, when Facebook first launched and it was closed only to university students, I had a first look at it, but I just thought this is just going to change the way, you know, information, you know, especially advertising and things like this is. But in both of those cases, I saw it, but I lacked the conviction. And I believed it, but I just thought, well, what do I know? And so then when Bitcoin finally came around, it's like, actually, I do know. And I see this as kind of a carry on to both of those. And even, you know, and we'll talk a little bit about this, but the way the Bitcoin protocol is set up, you know, it can translate into communication as well with like the Nostr protocol. And so the decentralization of information is really the vision of the original internet. And it has been kind of captured by larger organizations that control a lot of the flow of information now. So I think Bitcoin not only gives the opportunity to exchange value to value on a direct peer-to-peer basis, but it also allows us to retain the sovereignty of our own information and transmit that information on a peer-to-peer basis rather than having to go through gatekeepers of the information that the internet has now become. So yeah, I'm completely convicted with the Bitcoin protocol.
Well, I guess that all being said, I think that sets the stage. We got going in April. And so far, I know we put together some of these numbers, right, Lynn? What's the summary of some of the guests we've had?
Well, as of today, we've had 35 episodes since April 21st, which is halving day, which is when we launched. And 19 of those have been with founders and startups. We've interviewed 8 investors and or had 8 episodes featuring investors. And then we started a series called Deep Dives as we got into it, because we realized some topics needed a little bit more more explanation or more focus. And so we've had 3 of those, either deep dives or special episodes. And then you and I kind of hit on a formula that we think works really well for the podcast. They're called highlights. And so every time we record 5 episodes, you and I take a break and just kind of summarize what happened in those 5 episodes, because we do appreciate the value of everyone's time. And we think that those are just great snacks and just ways of just seeing exactly what happened over the last little bit. And then you can dive deeper into the episodes. And so it's a great way to become interested or educated about what sorts of technologies are being built on the Bitcoin protocol.
Yeah. And, you know, I was actually also looking at the geographical dispersion of our content so far this, you know, in 2020. And this is both founders and investors that we've gotten a chance to sit down and speak with. So 2/3 of the episodes have come from the US, which is, you know, not surprising. That being said, we also had guests from Canada, Europe, Guatemala, Israel, Mexico. We've had some pretty global representation, which is great to see and speaks to, you know, the Bitcoin technology stack and its borderless nature, right?
I've loved some of those episodes too, because they really point to the fact that some of the larger problems in the financial system are, or frictions that exist, are outside of the U.S. or traditional, you know, financial rails. And so by solving these problems, you know, there's some great opportunities for innovation all over that. And you and I have talked about this. We have not yet delved into the African continent and some of the innovation that's happening there, which we know is massive and is probably one of the biggest hotbeds of innovation for the Bitcoin protocol. So that's on our goal list for 2025, is to get more involved in what's going on there as well. So anyone who has company ideas in Africa that we should be talking to, please reach out to us.
Or any other region, which we
or any other region, Asia
covered.
Pacific as well, yeah. Too. That's we haven't really spoken with anyone there.
And the side note to that as well, I'm just remembering seeing our viewership and download statistics, and the top three was Australia, which we weren't necessarily expecting. So if anyone listening over there also wants to reach out, very welcome. We'd love to cover more regions. So I guess that all being said, let's maybe split this up into some of the learnings and what we've seen from the investor's perspective, and then we can get into the founder's perspective.
Yeah. And I think it's helpful to just start with a big picture of innovation. I mean, we really look at this as being a very new technology that people are starting to build on. And, you know, where traditional, I mean, many people have heard about, you know, the large amounts of investment capital that have gone into crypto and into Web3. We're focused specifically on companies that are building on the Bitcoin protocol, which would be, I guess, a subset of that. But it makes up a very small percentage of the funding that's gone into crypto overall. But we feel that the innovation is a lot more solid and has more more longevity in terms of its potential. So, you know, one of the reasons we wanted to start this podcast is to really shine a light on the underlying core technology of the Bitcoin protocol and why it's so important, and encourage more innovation and entrepreneurs to be building on it, as opposed to the world of crypto and Web3 digital assets, so which tend to be more in terms of tokenization. So none of the companies that we've spoken to or the investors that we've spoken to are involved in the tokenization of any asset, and deal only strictly with Bitcoin as a digital asset on top of the protocol.
Yeah, no, thanks for setting the stage there, Lynn. It does basically get down to the fact that we do view this as an entire kind of economy of products and services is going to be flowing through this network, right? So what's the technology doing for these entrepreneurs and investors, even though we're in the early stages?
So Israel, why don't you start us off and give us the perspective of what we've learned from the investor side, and what our key takeaways are from all the investors that we've spoken with in terms of the Bitcoin community.
Okay, so I mean, we've been able to speak to a variety of different investors, whether it's, you know, angels or different types of funds. I would say one thing that's very clear is everyone recognizes that the size of the opportunity and the fact that it's still very early and still misunderstood. But let's maybe take a step back and, you know, first speak to generally the stage of venture capital as a whole, right? And let's move away from Bitcoin for a second. And, you know, kind of preparing for this for this year in review, was looking up some of these figures. We were talking about this, Lynn. So global VC funding in the recent years has seen a bit of a decline and consolidation for some reasons that we can get into in a second. But for 2023, the total amount of venture capital that was deployed globally was roughly $250 billion. That being said, earlier stage deals seem to be a little more resilient to these other trends of decline and consolidation in greater VC. But so $250 billion is the size of the VC market in 2023, right? So let's just keep that in mind as a reference point. But before, you know, before I get into a couple of the other, you know, learnings, so Lynn, you recently closed down a VC fund during the pandemic, and you were in the VC space as an active investor for quite a few years. What do you think was part of the reason that we saw this recent decline in VC funding? I mean, what was it, macro? What's been going on maybe in the past few years that you've seen?
Yeah, it's a great question, Israel. And I think that, you know, in the zero interest rate environment that we were in for so many years, venture capital at first was not considered a valid investment for a lot of pension funds or institutional funds. It was too risky. But then as we started to see such great returns coming out of venture capital, then it became an asset class that people were really wanting to get into. And some of the more notable funds, the Sequoias, XL Partners, Andreessen Horowitz, they started raising just massive funds. And so there was a huge inflow of cash into venture capital that just put so much money into that ecosystem and that asset class that it became harder to deploy the capital. I mean, there are not as, you know, I think it was almost a mismatch for a while of how much money can you put into a company? And that's where you had that grow fast and break things and the Silicon Valley kind of, you know, just put as much money as you possibly can. And even in the crypto space, I think the biggest example of that was FTX, where so many VC funds were trying to chase that deal because it was such a rapidly growing company on paper. I mean, the numbers were not accurate, but it's like that the lack of due diligence for really supporting that investment or the amount of the investment that was going in, it was really indicative to me of what was happening in venture capital over the prior years. And yeah. And I'm speaking in broad terms, but, you know, just an excess of capital deploy, not as many deals that could really secure the returns back to the investors and in turn back to their investors, the limited partners of venture capital funds. And then the other kind of sister to that was the tokenization. So as Web3 and crypto became, you know, a popular space to invest in and opportunities started to arise, the common way of investing in those was to issue a token based on that technology and to pre-sell it or pre-mine it. And the investors got and founders got preferential rights. And it was really a very creative way of getting early exit liquidity for a lot of the funds. And I think, you know, where certainly there are some great projects and there are some, you know, great founders and ideas, that the overall space was basically a disappointment for future investors. And there's something like 22,000, you know, tokens out there. So that just talks to the excess of the way that capital was raised. And very few of them, you know, are at levels above what they, you know, issued those tokens at. So it was a shifting, you know, sands and venture capital in a different way of a returning asset to the fund on a much more rapid basis than they had traditionally, which traditional venture capital is basically a 5 to 10 year waiting period. And it's a longer term perspective of being partners with your founder and helping them, you know, go through the discovery, the product market fit, the finding, you know, your client, the scalability and to profitability. So it really was considered, you know, very, very early stage, long-term capital. And that model just seemed to kind of get a little perverted over the last, 5 years or 10 years. So it just, it changed.
Build with Bitcoin is a proud affiliate partner of River. River is a Bitcoin-only financial services company, which I have personally been using for years, and I'm a big fan of the product and company.
Yeah, I'm also a big fan too. And I'm a big fan, especially when it comes to referring my friend group to start their Bitcoin journey or acquire some Bitcoin, because in addition to being a Bitcoin-only financial services company, River also has personalized customer service. So a person can actually talk to a human being if they need to, when they're getting their account set up or in the process of it. I also love the fact that they have no fees on recurring purchases. And they also recently instituted a proof of reserve. So if you choose to hold your Bitcoin at River instead of self-custody, which many people do choose that, you can verify on their site that they have 100% reserve Bitcoin for every Bitcoin that you hold.
River also just launched a very interesting feature, which is a yield paid out in Bitcoin on your US dollar cash that you deposit at River. So you can hold that US dollar cash, earn that yield in Bitcoin in your account in River. And important to note, this is all through a regulated banking partner of theirs at a FDIC insured institution. So I think the River is a great partner for Bitcoin and cash deposited.
Yeah, because as much as we'd love to live on a Bitcoin standard, at least you and I, we need cash to operate in the world. And so this allows you to be able to earn a very competitive yield on your excess cash and have it paid in Bitcoin if you choose, and just continue to build your Bitcoin stash. So for anyone looking to start their journey, we invite you to join us at River by visiting partner.river.com/buildwithbitcoin.
I think it speaks to yet another facet of the economy that was kind of affected by this
broken
money system, right? Yeah, the zero interest rate policy environment, easy money. I mean, it just ends up breaking a few things, including this asset class, which, to your point, it was in its origins much more disciplined and lower time preference thinking in the long term. And it just goes to show this has all kind of led to malinvestment. So, okay, so that's a bit of where we're sitting at with venture capital. It sounds like it's kind of going, VC's kind of going through its growth pains. And what's next in that chapter, right? And can Bitcoin contribute to this next chapter? We're moving away from that previous, let's say post-COVID is clearly a different time. I mean, things can't continue with a zero interest rate policy and people having a blind eye to it. So we're kind of entering this new stage of higher interest rates. Economic uncertainties will persist. And so I think what's clear is that investors are no longer going to be accepting this previous dynamic of, growth at any cost and, monetize later, we'll figure it out. And instead, you're already seeing and continue to see this shift towards, hey, what's the revenue? What's the profitability earlier in a startup's journey, right? Speaking back to startups and venture capital. So, I mean, this all kind of ties us in a nice way to what, some of Bitcoin's principles, which is why we so clearly see and believe that Bitcoin is going to play a big role in this kind of next chapter of venture capital. Previously, I referenced $250 billion in 2023. So just to give people a size of how underrepresented Bitcoin technology startups are still to this day in that global picture, that's $250 billion global in 2023. The figures we were looking at put us roughly between $250 million and $300 million invested in Bitcoin startups in 2023, which... That being said, we're talking about not even, less than 1%, but actually 0.1% as a reference point of the global VC market. So, I mean, Bitcoin startups are largely still a sector that's pretty much ignored, right? I mean, and make your own assumptions as to what share of global VC the technology stack will capture. But, I mean, given the fact that it's disrupting the entire payments and monetary markets, I think 0.1 is still a massive underrepresentation and underinvestment.
Well, I do want to say that I think traditional VC will continue on the path that it's going in many sectors. Like AI has been the predominant sector over the last year, I think, of funding. And there's still like enormous amounts of money being invested in companies as they strive for growth. So I'd kind of segregate traditional VC is still on their path and they're still investing in different crypto companies and digital assets at a slower pace than they were before. But the Bitcoin ecosystem, I think there are a select number of investors that have understood that this is an asymmetrical opportunity, that there just has very rarely been something that has this much potential to disrupt financial markets and so little investment going into it. So it's a big opportunity. And everyone that we've talked to, I mean, they number one, point out the potential for this asset class or this sector of tech investing as being very specific. But also they talk about how they're surprised that more traditional VCs haven't identified the same opportunity, or more money hasn't flowed into it. So they're happy that they have this kind of early mover advantage into it. And but it does take work, I think, for somebody to really, you know, understand the potential of Bitcoin. It takes a lot of studying or time and effort to kind of see what's happening in this and what the potential is. And so if there's an easy way to look at something else, they may not take that time initially, but it's definitely well worth it. So I would say that that's, you know, but the other thing that I think you and I have noticed is that it tends, the investors who are focused on the Bitcoin space, and again, there aren't a lot of them, but the ones that are really all in on understanding the protocol, understanding the potential, being deep on the tech side of it. And but they also have tremendous integrity, and they really are getting back to the original model of venture capital from the early days of Silicon Valley, where they view themselves as partners with the founders, and they're on a path together. And I think the integrity of the work that they're doing with the founders is something that is so refreshing to see after spending time in the traditional tech VC industry. So I'm really pleased to see the shift in that. One of the interviews we had was with Jeff Booth, who's the founding partner of Ego Death Capital. And I loved what he said about that in Bitcoin VC, each node makes the next node stronger. And so it really, you see a lot of these VC funds working together on deals, co-investing, and there's a synergy among them and among supporting the founders that is just really beautiful to see and experience.
Yeah, and that those points you speak to, we certainly saw in every one of the conversations we had with the different investors in the space. That's for sure. And maybe, okay, so let's zoom in to this, you know, Bitcoin VC niche that's still very small, but, you know, maybe we can try and size it from some of our own research and our work this year and the conversations we've been having. So we're talking about to, you know, maybe give some size and scope to this. Active firms focused on Bitcoin, we've found there's roughly a little under 25. These are global numbers, give or take a few. And then the size of the deals, what are some of the funds that we're seeing to date?
Well, you know, it's interesting. My fund supported LATAM, and I think our first one fund was a raise of 10 million, and everyone in Silicon Valley was just laughing that if you're not 100 million, you're like not, you don't count. And all the early VC funds for Bitcoin focus were around that same stage, like $5 to $10 million, because that's what the market warranted. That's what the fund, that's what really made sense in the market. So, you know, now a lot of these funds are on their second or third funds, and the early returns are looking great for the initial funds that they have. But, you know, this year the activity that we started seeing is Ego Death is raising their second fund, which is $100 million fund. And it's to support Series A stage companies in the Bitcoin space. Their first fund was more seed stage, and they closed $43 million by August 24th. And I think based on our conversations, I think that they've wrapped up that fund or close to wrapping that up. TimeChain, which is a fund out of primarily Europe, is currently raising their second fund at $50 million after super. I mean, the initial returns in their first fund are looking very strong. And 1031, which is one of the first VC funds to focus on this space, is raising a $200 to $300 million target fund that they just recently announced. So, you know, we're starting to see, and it makes sense because the ecosystem of startups is evolving. And so as the founders find product market fit, are looking to scale, as Bitcoin becomes more adopted and tools are needed, you know, more funding is needed to support the growth of these founders that are building on Bitcoin. So, you know, we're starting to see larger funds being raised in this space. But again, it's still, you know, small compared to Silicon Valley, but I think it's appropriate for the market too.
Still small and of course evolving, but, and, you know, to no surprise, this is largely still concentrated in the US and Europe, these funds, but they are deploying capital globally. And to your point, I mean, there is a clear trend that this is going to continue to grow, right? We're only in the kind of beginning stages of this. You know, maybe getting to LP returns, it's been an interesting these are young funds, so exact LP returns are kind of TBD. But we could begin to see some changes in the, you know, maybe IPO and acquisition model as startups begin to focus on profitability at earlier stages. And we'll get into the founder's perspective next. But you know, I think there's still a big question mark on what LP returns look like in these VC funds, as you have what seems to be a clear trend of those founders that are successful at growing their businesses have been disciplined from the beginning and have maybe incorporated Bitcoin into the treasury. And we'll get into more of that. But I think LP returns is a bit of a question mark as far as things move forward. But it's looking very promising from some of the initial conversations we're having, right, Lynn?
Yeah, and I think it actually is a whole rethinking of the VC space. So, you know, venture capital traditionally has their own investors, the limited partners, and they expect returns. The VCs expect returns from their portfolio companies. But what happens when you're on a Bitcoin standard? So what happens when the portfolio company is earning in an asset that's appreciating instead of depreciating? What happens when a portfolio company has as part of their treasury an asset that's appreciating instead of depreciating? And so, you know, it's never been done. I mean, there are no priors to this. So it's really exciting to think about the possibilities. So some of the conversations we have point to the fact that maybe the path for success in this new model won't be an IPO, you know, where a company goes public, or may not be taken over by another public company. A lot of the founders seem to want to stay independent. It's part of the nature of a Bitcoin mentality, I think, to stay sovereign. But, you know, if you're generating Bitcoin as an asset, I mean, Bitcoin, the ability to obtain Bitcoin will become scarcer with time too. So if an LP can receive returns in Bitcoin instead of in a cash out, a fiat cash out, how great would that be? And same thing with the venture fund. So we might see a whole shifting of the math where the returns are not stated in US dollar terms, but they're stated in Bitcoin terms. And they actually end up giving much greater returns based on the increasing value of Bitcoin over time. And, you know, we've really seen that play out over this year. And yeah, I think most of us would expect that trend to only accelerate in future years. So, you know, you could think of returns as being paid in dividends, payable in Bitcoin to both venture funds and LPs in return. And that's kind of a thought experiment that I just really enjoy having. What do you think, Israel?
Yeah, and I mean, not much to add there, because I think a lot of that is yet to be seen. But clearly, it is changing how both founders and investors, whether it's, you know, the fund itself, the active manager, or the LP, is thinking about returns, right? I mean, it takes us to the whole conversation of Bitcoin as the hurdle rate. And that just, it has such a change of mindset on how you grow the company and how you return capital to investors. Needless to say, it's the first time we're seeing this kind of a completely different money being natively used in this sector of innovation that's being invested in. So, you know, it'll be exciting to see how some of these theses play out. Absolutely. And we are seeing signs of, you know, this market maturing, you know, to your point earlier, of some more sizable funds. Now we're talking 50, 100, 200, 300 million size funds. You know, those aren't irrelevant numbers anymore. And in 2024, you saw the first Bitcoin company IPO through a SPAC that was Fold, not to mention the other activity in the public markets with MicroStrategy and all, you know, all these other examples of this is clearly maturing, right? So it'll be great to see, you know, how this changes venture capital, like you were getting to, Lynn.
Yeah.
And, you know, maybe that takes us to the founder's perspective. All that being said, that's from the investor side, you know, how we're seeing the evolution of things. What about the founder's perspective, Lynn? What would you summarize there as far as what we've observed?
Yeah, and I think one of the starting points there, really with both VC, you know, being an investor in a VC fund or being an investor in a founder, you mentioned Bitcoin as a hurdle rate. And so basically what we're saying there is that an investment that you make either in a company or in a fund should outperform Bitcoin. And that's been hard to do. And it's much less certain with a startup founder than it is with buying Bitcoin and holding it. Yet, I think a lot of the early investors or early supporters of these companies have been people who really, number one, understand that we need better infrastructure in order for global adoption and different use cases to build out, especially on the institutional level. It might have been fine for individuals that are very computer tech savvy, that understand the protocol. But as Bitcoin grows in adoption and awareness, I mean, we do need better tools. And so to be a part of building that infrastructure, just like the infrastructure of the internet, going back to my earlier, you know, just seeing how that all built out and you know, the internet in the early days, it was really clunky. I mean, it was the dial up. It was, you know, it took forever for anything. And so, you know, now we have speed, we have bandwidth, we have, you know, you can watch full videos on your phone. And so there's just been an incredible evolution. And I anticipate that's what we'll see with Bitcoin. I mean, right now, people, you know, get held up with the seed phrase and, you know, how you custody or self-custody or exchanges and, you know, what is a Lightning Network? And so all these things that are really underlying parts of the infrastructure will eventually become seamless, and it'll just be very easy to transfer value to value from person to person or entity to person, entity to entity without friction or expense. And we'll just free up so much capital that's kind of stuck in the current financial system that really doesn't add any value. So the companies, you know, we're looking at founders who have come to Bitcoin in various different ways. Some of them really love the privacy and sovereignty of it. Some of them love the financial inclusion aspect of it, or are solving problems for themselves and so building out a company. But in general, I think some of the commonalities that we found across the founders is they tend to be real Bitcoiners and that they have low time preference. So they're in it for the long term, and they're really in it, you know, speaking to the integrity of the individuals, they're really trying to solve a problem that they feel will add benefit in the world. And they're willing to put in the work and to wait for it to, you know, to have the patience for it to be built out. They do understand that Bitcoin is the opportunity cost. And so they need to demonstrate that they have the potential to, you know, exceed that rate of return from Bitcoin itself by being a part of the essential infrastructure or use cases of it. And we see that they, because it's been so hard for them to raise funding versus like a crypto company that tokenizes itself, they have, you know, focused on profitability earlier. So they become a lot more resilient in terms of the different cycles of the Bitcoin pricing. And so they, you know, they aim to, number one, earn revenue from their product as early as possible, retain, you know, spend less than they are earning, and put some of their profits back into Bitcoin and building a Bitcoin treasury. And that Bitcoin treasury has been one of the commonalities among these companies. They understand the value of Bitcoin, and so they're preserving some of their capital in Bitcoin. And that has actually kept them from needing to raise as much as perhaps a traditional early stage tech company would need. So, you know, it's again a fascinating shift in that. I think what you and I have discovered is that investing in Bitcoin companies might be very different than investing in other tech companies, in that the opportunities will be at the very early stage. And if that company is putting part of their treasury in Bitcoin, like Fold is, that you just referenced, there may not be opportunities to participate in an investor opportunity going forward, because they might have enough capital or revenues or be earning in Bitcoin so that they don't need to take on capital after they reach that product market fit.
Yeah. And you know, what's also interesting is I think the companies that are successful in growing and providing value to society through their products and services, I think they're likely to be around for much longer, because, I mean, it kind of goes back to the, you know, mindset of the founder itself of this low time preference and being in it for the long haul. I mean, it's just the incentive structure and mindset is just so different from what we were speaking to earlier on regarding the previous, you know, kind of easy money era, where you didn't really have to focus too much on profitability and actually the profitability, I mean, that means that as a business, society is giving you this feedback loop that what you're producing is valuable to give you profit, you know, to continue doing it. Which sounds so basic, but in the easy money area previously, and some of the VC trends that you kind of highlighted earlier, I think go to show that before it was more so just, you know, grow, exit, and maybe, you know, whether the company's around in 50 years or not, still, yeah, that maybe I don't care that much as a founder or investor in that environment or mindset, right? I mean, I just kind of need to grow and exit, and this will take, you know, decades to see, but I do think that there will be some interesting trends there as far as the Bitcoin startups that we're seeing right now and will continue to see over the coming years. The ones that are successful in deploying their products and services, I think I have a feeling they'll be around for quite a bit of time. And then I guess, you know, those themes I think we've seen in the mindset of every one of the, or mostly all founders that we've spoken to, and they're kind of executing their business strategy accordingly, right? And so maybe honing in on some of the specifics of, you know, kind of snapshot of what we've seen. You know, some of the main sectors would be brokerage and lending, mining, custody, payments and layer twos. Most of these companies have been operational for under 5 years, I would say. Some of the more mature companies we're talking about 6 to 8 years old. So it's still, you know, naturally a very young industry. Another thing that we've observed is funding is tough, right? I mean, they've all, you know, been very candid about it. It's not an easy fundraising environment, but that being said, and it goes back to your point, right, Lynn, that investors who understand what Bitcoin is, their hurdle rate is Bitcoin again, which is a pretty high bar, right? That's not an easy hurdle rate. So we have seen that funding is tough, but that being said, some of the VCs, the Bitcoin VCs and Bitcoin angel investors have been key allies.
Yeah, almost. I mean, that's been a predominant theme, I think. I think River is one of the only companies we've seen that's raised substantial funding that has come outside of the Bitcoin ecosystem. But most everyone else, you know, I really applaud the VCs and Bitcoin, but they're all true Bitcoiners. I mean, the VCs that have started these funds and even the angel investors, they tend to be the really early adopters in Bitcoin that have seen it and understand the potential. So I think it's tougher to bring in funding from more traditional VCs, but I think that will shift. I mean, especially I think this year, that might be one of the big shifts that we see next year, is that other traditional VCs start to look at Bitcoin as an opportunity that they want to invest in the infrastructure of the technology.
I think we absolutely will. I mean, as the companies mature, and we've already seen the early signs of that. You know, you were mentioning River, Unchained, I believe, and those two, right, specifically come to mind as, you know, maybe some of the more mature startups in the sector. And these companies that are, you know, in the later stages, we are seeing other very renowned, you know, active VCs and other investors participating in their follow-up rounds, right? Which, you know, isn't surprising. I mean, ultimately, you know, investors are going to look for solid businesses with good returns, and so I agree, Lynn. I think we'll continue to see the very Bitcoin VC focused niche from, you know, the pre-seed to Series A, maybe, and then from there forward, I do think we'll continue to see a more diverse, you know, pool of capital.
Yeah, it just makes sense. I mean, I think our core Bitcoin VCs, you know, as if a company really is growing, they're going to need to, you know, maybe they don't have the capital inside of their own fund, so they partner with some of these funds that have, you know, that can get on board with the with the mindset of what a Bitcoin VC, how they want to operate with their founder, but we'll need the capital, you know, from these larger pools of money, and it's one of our goals in the podcast is to reach out to the traditional VC and say, hey, there's tremendous opportunity here, and it's, you know, it's one of the biggest technology shifts I think that we can see, and it's, you know, worthwhile learning about it to, you know, potentially become a part of. But getting back to the founder, you know, just as there's a mindset for a Bitcoin VC, we have seen very similar, you know, a trend of similarities among the mindset of the founders. And it tends to be to raise less funding, you know, to raise only what they need, be very conservative in their funding and raise less frequently because their lower time preference. And also, I think in many cases, the desire for the founder to really retain the control of the company. They're on a longer term path and they want to make sure that they have the ability to direct that path in the way that they foresee Bitcoin growing and becoming a more important part of the financial underpinnings of the global economy. So their goal has been on profitability, and that allows them to keep that control because they don't require outside funding to continue if they can hold on to it based on operational cash flow or sats flow, as Grant from 1031 likes to call it when they earn in Bitcoin. Then they're not in a rush and they're not beholden to the investors. So, you know, I think it's I think that's a different path too that we're seeing.
Yeah, and a very welcome path, right? I mean, I think that, you know, not just to kind of emphasize the impact of that. I mean, anyone who's been close to the startup or VC sector in the last couple decades probably knows plenty of people of or these stories where, you know, startup founders are pouring all their time and energy into growing their startup, and a few years go by and then they kind of in the later stages realize they actually got maybe unfairly diluted or without knowing diluted a much larger percentage than they would have of course liked to, and they end up with just a fractional part of that company of what they poured all their time into, right? And so I think this you know, Bitcoin as a savings technology in that regard, being able to plug that into your treasury is also a very welcomed defense against this kind of predatory dilution that tended to occur quite often in the sectors. We're getting close to the wrap up of the 2024 year in review here. Looking ahead, Lynn, I guess, what are some of the opportunities that come to mind?
Well, in addition to investing in Bitcoin VC, which I think is a great first starting point, I think investors who are looking at a really interesting opportunity should consider investing in some of these funds that have the expertise to be able to identify the highest potential growth companies in the sector. But, you know, you and I talk a lot about this, like what's coming. I mean, I think from a big picture, a lot of the companies that have started so far have been very foundational. So they've been on and off ramps into Bitcoin or Bitcoin into stable coins and wallets and the very fundamental tools for being able to access Bitcoin or transact in Bitcoin. But, you know, in our last five episodes that we've talked with, we're seeing just a shift in or an expansion of the opportunities in using some of the more some of the parts of the Bitcoin protocol to like Miniscript and Taproot assets that enable perhaps an expansion of the financial layers or capital markets. So rebuilding capital markets on the Bitcoin protocol, I think that's going to be just a really exciting shift that we see. And that comes for everything from real world assets being traded or being able to, I mean, right now our financial system kind of works on business hours, which is a little crazy when you think about it. It doesn't need to be. Everything else works on, you know, internet hours, which is 24/7, 365, and Bitcoin operates in that way too. So it makes sense that there will be a redefinition of when you can trade stocks, assets, in the same way that you can trade Bitcoin. So I think the remaking of capital markets is a big opportunity. And what, how do you feel about that?
You and I have
both been in that world. So, you know.
Yeah. And just to, first of all, reiterate your point of, you know, kind of get involved and look into the Bitcoin VC sector as well. I mean, you're talking about one of the most disruptive technologies in decades, and it's currently representing 0.1% of global early stage technology exponential growth capital. I mean, you know, there's clearly some misalignment there. And to your point, Lynn, and of course, we both firmly believe this, that just creates massive amount of opportunity. And yeah, who knows how quickly things will change. I think things will kind of pick up at a rapid pace. But, you know, right now is still just such an exciting and opportune moment to get involved and into seeing some of these and participating in some of these companies that are growing and are going to be such a sizable part of the economy going forward. Kind of just reminds me of back to the origins, which anyone who has studied Bitcoin from, you know, from its earlier days, there were some parallels to these, you know, internet protocols and how they evolved. And at first there were so many competing ones, and then you saw this consolidation, and now we all use, you know, what was built on top of one single protocol as a result of that. So, you know, that there's still so much yet to be built. It's going to take time and education, and we're perfectly aware of that. But yeah, I mean, you know, I would leave it at that.
Yeah, and we talked a little bit about this earlier, but there's the Nostr protocol, which is modeled somewhat after Bitcoin, and that it's truly decentralized, and it allows you, I guess, if you think of it, like if you post on Facebook or Instagram or X, you know, your content resides on that platform. But on this more decentralized one, you actually own your content in the same way the public key, private key matchup works on the Bitcoin protocol. So you can move. You can take all your content and move it to another platform or provider of that service. So, you know, I think that's exciting to enable communication, identity, you know, secured identity to be able to move with you to verify your identity. So those are some opportunities that are beyond the purely financial aspect of Bitcoin that I think are exciting looking ahead. And then I guess I'll just end my part of this with what I talk about endlessly on almost every episode that we do. But it's like, I think there's an enormous opportunity for micropayments that is native to Bitcoin because of the sats, you know, the tiny amounts, the fraction of a Bitcoin, which is called a Satoshi or a sat, just allows for movement on a, you know, we haven't been able to transfer small amounts of money because of the expense of doing so in the traditional financial system. But the Bitcoin protocol allows that. So I think, you know, I envision this world where content, whether it's movies or music or books or news or anything you can think of, can be transferred based on your actual consumption, and you pay only for what you consume instead of monthly subscriptions and the models that I feel are very outdated. And that can be accomplished really easily. It's just that we don't have the tools yet, or we haven't built the tools. So it's like, somebody please build the tools to do that. But I think that just will unlock tremendous opportunities. And that includes micropayments for AI agents. So I think most of us are seeing the tremendous growth in the LLMs and AI utilities that we're all able to access now. But if you can, you know, basically give your AI agent an allowance to complete a task for you, you can do that with sats. And it's a native, I think Bitcoin will be the native currency of AI as we move forward. So that's another huge opportunity that I see that is being explored. So, I mean, it's just, I get so excited because I just see so much opportunity. And it's, you know, just hats off to the founders who are building these and taking these ideas and making them real, and then the investors that are supporting them. But I don't know, Israel, do you see other areas of interest and opportunity beyond those?
You know, I think maybe that's a good place to end things. I mean, there's just, like you were saying, there's endless amounts of use cases to this technology. I mean, the very obvious ones, but we're starting to get into these more niche ones. And that's just because it's disrupting the entire monetary market, right? I mean, that's a big deal. So, I mean, maybe moving away from the specifics, I would just maybe end it on, you know, get involved one way or another, participate. I mean, see, really the only barriers to this industry, the barrier of entry, is how much time you're willing to spend and educate yourself and just kind of, you know, plug into this open system. You know, it's open source, it's borderless. We have so many tools. There's, you know, open communication, luckily, already. You know, we can talk to people, you know, from the comfort of our own home. We can connect with anyone globally. There's a vast amount of resources online. You know, you even have AI agents now to help you with all of this. And, you know, the internet, of course, for communication and education has done wonders. So, I mean, really, I mean, there's not many barriers to entry, I guess, is what I would end it on to,
yeah,
to as a message for people. It's not easy, but it's up to you. I mean, it's just how much time you put into this. So plenty of opportunity.
I just want to kind of tag on to that, because I think that's a really important point. And in addition to the fact that it's a very open protocol that you can learn, the community itself, Bitcoiners, I found to be unbelievably open and sharing and generous with their time and experience and knowledge. So we're at the stage of the growth of this where, you know, it's easy to meet people to, I mean, there's a lot of information on podcasts, ours and others. You know, there are conferences, which are great ways to get to meet people and to find jobs in Bitcoin. I think that there's tremendous opportunity. I mean, it's just the level of generosity of knowledge and the intelligence and integrity of the people in the Bitcoin space right now, I think, is just unparalleled. I've never seen anything like it in my life. And so I would just encourage you to, you know, anyone who's listening who wants to explore this further, whether as an investor or as a in the startup space, that it's easy to do. And, you know, and speaking of which, it's like we started a podcast, but we've had incredible support from some of the biggest thought leaders in the Bitcoin space. And I just want to say a special thank you to all of our early interviews this year and, you know, for supporting us on our journey of building Build with Bitcoin and to take the time to be a part of our world.
Yeah. Big thanks to everyone who's been a part of this, and, you know, to the listeners as well. We hope you find it useful. And, you know, that being said, and look forward to the year ahead.
Thanks for listening to the Build with Bitcoin podcast. If you found benefit in what you heard in this episode, we'd truly appreciate it if you would like, share, or leave a comment on whichever platform you're listening, as this helps others find us, which is especially important for a new podcast. And as a reminder, our content is intended for educational and entertainment purposes only and is not to be considered investment advice or recommendation to invest in any company or asset mentioned in the podcast. Build with Bitcoin is a proud affiliate partner of River, a full-service, 100% reserve custody Bitcoin-only financial services company. For your next Bitcoin purchase, use our exclusive link, partner.river.com/buildwithbitcoin. Thank you sincerely for being a part of the Build with Bitcoin community.